Good morning again. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you have just joined us. We were talking to James a little earlier on, and there are supports available for people, and you can talk to them if you have an addiction. It's confidential. It's non-judgmental. There's no cost involved. There's expert advice and practical supports. You can contact one of the outreach workers on 086 775 2142. Or 087342 3006. And we have those numbers here. And they work in certain areas. And maybe that does affect you, or maybe you realise you have an addiction, or maybe you need some support. And when was the right time, or when is the right time? Or maybe this morning is the right time. If you speak to people in recovery or those who have come through an addiction, you know, there's always a point whereby something clicked or something changed, or they heard something and it made that difference. And with all of our support, if that's you, maybe you could reach out and call 074-912-0633. Just have a conversation and see if it's a pathway for, you know, you to get your life back, for you to start feeling better, for you to maybe deal with the issues that have caused your addiction, or to rebuild family relationships, whatever it might be. Today maybe could be that day. I'm not painting it as a pretty easy picture. It could be tough, but who's to say that maybe we don't reach that person today? And that's why we do those interviews. So hopefully that is you. Thank you very much again to James for coming in. We were talking about the cost of accommodation for students. It's different elsewhere, in this person's experience anyway. Hi Greg, my sons are in Belfast for the last few years. Both are in houses of good standard with their own rooms. €300 and £300 and £350 per month. Why can't Republic of Ireland provide the same deals for students? To me, it's just the greed of the landlords. It's still €500 a month for a room. I wouldn't like to have to meet that cost, but it seems much less than what others are being asked to pay. Morning, Greg. Just a comment in relation to defective concrete. And I know lots of people send in mica, and I do change the word mica to defective concrete because it's kind of progressed on a little bit. And I know some people just use that name because it's synonymous with the crisis that we're talking about. But I do know there's a lot of effort to sort of broaden out the conversation about what's causing defective concrete. So please continue to send in the word mica if you wish, but please don't be offended if I just replace it with defective concrete. But this caller goes on to say, I really don't know where this cap is going to end. All I do know is if you want to build a house in Donegal at the minute, you would need to win the lotto. Unbelievable, the prices that are being quoted. Another, there are people begging outside banks in a town in Donegal. I've noticed occurring again. It's putting people off going to the bank. Are the guards not meant to be clamping down on it? This is actually Letterkenny, and there was an issue before about people begging, but this caller has noticed people begging returning. So they're asking, are the guards clamping down on that? The Microaction Group have been left no choice but to protest where it hurts. I would fully support their action and block the road. Again, just to reiterate, I was contacted by members of the ambulance service in Donegal, and they don't want to necessarily speak publicly because they do not want to be seen to be the anti-protest, given the fact that they are part of the community and that many may very well be affected. But they are genuinely concerned that access is maintained both outwards and inwards, both outwards and inwards for emergency vehicles, ambulances and what have you, because every second counts in an emergency. And even if everyone says, all right, quick, everyone pull over, there needs to be a plan to get ambulances in and out, I would have thought. Why aren't there streetlights? I'll just come back to that one because there might have been an incident there, and I just want to double check that that's not insensitive. Another on defective concrete. How are the people who have an NCT this evening going to get to the centre with the Mica Action protest? This protest is unjust and not fair for people who have to get the NCT centre and other places. The whole road will be blocked. They're going to try, I'm sure, as best to accommodate people. As I said yesterday, even when the protest was taken to Dublin, you're going to inconvenience people down there. That's the nature of protest. That's unfortunately the way things sort of have to go. In 1987, I used to thumb from Ballybuffet to Galway every Sunday night and back up to Ballybuffet. And a Friday evening, we shared a house with eight other lads. Maybe these students are soft and spoiled. I was in Anko learning a trade. That stood to me in the years to come. Sometimes in life, you've got to get out there and do it and grab it. Yeah, I mean, I used to thumb myself. I don't think it's safe or advisable to do it any longer, but I do take your point. Okay. Thank you very much for that. Actually, funny, I was driving the other day. That caller was talking about things he used to do in the past. I was driving the other day and I was on a road with chips on it and another car was approaching and I put my thumb up to the windscreen and I realised I hadn't done that for 25 years. There was some sort of a muscle memory, that made me do it. I don't know why, but it's just one of those things that we always used to do. Do we? Maybe people still do and I just stopped doing it. But put your thumb up to the windscreen, because I was told by my dad once that it stopped the windscreen cracking if it was hit by a stone. Maybe you've got something that of the past that we just don't seem to do anymore. Maybe that's not even a good example of it. Anyway, 086 60 25,000 if you want to get involved. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Slightly distracted because I'm being bombarded by spam on WhatsApp for some reason. All right, back with more after the bingo numbers. It's bingo jackpot day. Good luck if you're playing. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're joined by Minister of State at the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, Deputy Alan Dillon from the Fine Gael Think Tank in Tullamore. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you very much. Minister, thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and to your listeners.
The proposals for a public sector childcare system are gaining an awful lot of traction and will trigger a lot of conversation at the thinking today. Are we learning any more about these proposals?
Well, certainly today and yesterday was an opportunity for us in Tullamore on the resumption of the next Dáil term to focus on the key issues that matter to people. And central to that, as you said, is childcare, housing, you know, protecting small businesses, law and order, and migration. And with the upcoming budget happening in 3 weeks' time, it also gives us an opportunity to look at the real pressing issues. And one surrounds the cost of living, which is a major issue for so many. And that's why Fine Gael and the government are working very hard in trying to put money back into people's pockets in order to reduce your home bills. And also to ensure that you know, earn and keep more of your hard-earned money. And through the key priorities within Budget 2025, we hope that we can continue the progress that we've made in that regard, continuing from last year's budget, but also in other areas like building more houses, delivering more home ownership, you know, cutting the costs of raising your family, and also around helping towards the cost of childcare. And you talked about childcare there, you know, and Fine Gael has done an awful lot in this regard, along with its coalition partners. And we understand that, you know, we need to give children the best start possible and that their parents must have choice when it comes to the availability of caring for their children. And the evidence is clear. You know, Ireland needs to continue to invest heavily in early childcare and early childhood education. And that certainly will reap the rewards in their later life. You know, I know myself, being a parent of a 3 and 4 year old, how reliant I am on childcare. And, you know, I'm very lucky that I have the availability, I have the placement, and we're doing a lot in relation to driving the cost down for parents. So, you know, Fine Gael is in election preparation mode. We're delivering and drafting our manifestos. And one of these key areas is around a public childcare model. And the Taoiseach Simon Harris is very passionate about this, to help parents to prioritise their young children's you know, early education. And what we want to do, like we've done in primary education and secondary education, is if given the opportunity in the next government, that we would plan to deliver a national childcare system in full by 2030. And this certainly would be transformational for the sector, and certainly we're making this a key priority within our manifesto.
You mentioned business and the cost of doing business, and we're seeing, you know, huge levels of small businesses, particularly in the hospitality area, closing. Lots of different things have been introduced, opt-out pensions and minimum wage increases and more on the way. What can your party, if returned to government, actually do to try and support these businesses? Because they seem to be after, it's almost like the government gets the credit for, you know, increasing minimum wage or sort of progressive pension systems. But it seems time and time again, it's the small and medium businesses that pick up the cost, and they're going out of business in huge numbers.
Yes, and certainly we have engaged with many, many key stakeholders across the business sector in relation to trying to alleviate some of them cost constraints that they have been impacted on over the last number of years. And certainly last year, the government introduced a quarter of €1 billion through the increase to cost of business grant to try and give back to businesses.
But with respect, Minister, there wasn't huge take-up of that, and I think that money's being repackaged into another scheme. So clearly, it's either too complicated or it's hard to get access to, because whilst it might be there, a lot of businesses are closing and not drawing it down. So do you not think that maybe whatever needs to come in needs to be, you know, easier to access for all businesses?
Yeah, and we are continuing to that engagement. A range of supports, as I said, were put in place through the cost of living crisis. We had huge increases in energy costs. We've also introduced a number of energy efficiency grants for businesses, and we will continue to do that because we know the importance of SMEs through the length and breadth of this country, how important they are to rural communities. They employ, you know, provide vital jobs in rural communities. So we need to ensure that businesses are supported while also ensuring those low-pay workers are respected, that they have the proper conditions and pay awarded. But we are acutely aware of the challenges to some of the hospitality, small cafes, and we have had an extensive engagement. And I know Minister Peter Burke and Minister Emer Higgins will bring a number of measures in regards to this, because we certainly can't sit back and allow businesses to close. And we are, you know, engaging continuously. We have a conference in Athlone on the 21st of September. I'm sure a lot of these key issues will be discussed, and we want to hear from businesses in that regard, and we will do everything in our power to ensure that this budget does provide the supports that needed to help businesses into the future.
The business closures are across many sectors, but, you know, recent figures show 612 restaurants, cafes, gastropubs, other hospitality businesses serving food have closed since 9% VAT was returned to 13.5% VAT. Is there any appetite within government to reintroduce the 9% VAT, but at least do it in a way where it actually supports the good, honest businesses trying to keep their heads above the water, and doesn't reward some businesses in that sector who are gouging and making huge profits?
Yeah, and listen, I think you have raised an important point, Greg, and I think we need to move away from the supports and the conversation around a cut to the VAT rate and ensure that these businesses are put on a more sustainable and solid footing. The VAT rate cut was introduced, you know, when inflation was hitting up to 10%, nearly double digits, previously around COVID, where we had to stimulate our economy to ensure that these businesses could survive. We have seen a huge rebound in our economy. We've one of the strongest performing economies across the EU. We've record employment levels. But I understand that there is specific sectors who find that they have huge inflationary costs around food, around the cost of doing business. And as I said, the decision around the VAT rate is one for Minister Jack Chambers and senior cabinet ministers, but it is one that we, you know, continue to hear on the ground. And I would say, it possibly, if the VAT rate isn't adjusted. Maybe other supports can be provided in other means to ensure that they can spread their cost differentials across a wider area.
Minister, obviously, you talked up there, not talked up, because that sounds like you're saying something that's not true, but referenced the economy in this country. You referenced how well it's doing, and that's good. And for the Haves, I'm delighted for them. But I find it hard to hear those words with the knowledge that there's 230,000 children in this country judged as facing deprivation of some form or other. I mean, can we really boast about our economy and our wealth and our progress when 230,000 children are in a situation whereby their families can't afford clothing or fooding or food?
Yes, and our Taoiseach has, you know, been very strong in relation to ensuring that those who are less well off are supported. There's a child poverty unit within sub-cabinet committee that are acutely aware of trying to address the challenges amongst those who provide who may struggle. And I know through a number of measures through Minister Humphreys, you know, she has implemented the Hot Schools Meals Programme. We will continue to ensure that families are supported. Again, in this budget, there will be, a family support package.
Will they be targeted, Minister? Because a lot of them are universal. So, we have to treat all children equally in certain areas. I do understand that. But, you know, I think the most people would like to see the 1 in 5 households with children up to the age of 5 living in poverty. You know, active measures to ensure that they are supported. Maybe more so than millionaires who might also receive some of these universal benefits.
Yeah, and we will only know on budget day, but certainly the feeling from our discussions here at this think-in is around both a combination of universal and targeted measures. You know, we are going to provide over €1 billion in welfare supports. I think that's really important that, as you said, that they're targeted to those who are the most vulnerable. And we will continue to do that because it's really important that we raise the bar in relation to how we address child poverty. I know the Taoiseach is very committed in order to do that, and everyone should be supported in that regard.
Housing, obviously, a department of which your Minister of State, amongst local government and heritage, is a key priority. But say, for instance, here in Donegal, in terms of being able to live and work, we are platforming stories of, you know, young couples, single parents, landlord has come to them and said, my son's moving into the house, or it's got defective concrete, I'm going to have to kick you out, or they're selling it, or whatever it might be. You know, there's an awful lot of people are struggling with housing here. But one of our greatest challenges is not you saying we're going to provide, I'll pick a figure, 20 houses for Donegal in the next 4 or 5 years. It's how you're going to do that. Our sewerage infrastructure, our water infrastructure, delays in the planning process, all are barriers to actually providing the houses that we often hear promised. What can your party in government again actually do to start delivering houses in a county like Donegal and not, you know, hundreds of thousands of apartments in and around Dublin that, you know, might look like constructions or housing delivery, but we up here look at it and go, well, hold on a second, there's no rental accommodation, there's hardly any houses on the market, and we've got a defective block crisis, which I might speak to you more specifically on in a moment. But, you know, how do you deliver houses in an infrastructurally poor county like Donegal when also there seems to be an awful lot of hoops to jump through from a planning perspective? Because that's where the real delivery comes from, I would feel.
So currently, the government has agreed a process which is in place to bring clarity around future housing ambitions, and that will be reflected in every county, in Donegal included. You know, the minister has written to each of the local authorities for them to undertake an assessment of the demands, needs within their own areas. And I think that's really important because we have currently the National Planning Framework, which was published in June, and that indicates that we need up to 50,000 houses over the next several years. And in October, we would hope that we would provide more granular detail on the composition of these targets, and that would certainly include geographical breakdown. And I think, you know, any fair analysis would show that government is making progress in relation to housing supply, and certainly we're committed to doing that.
Yes, but in relation to delivery, Alan, say for instance, in terms of the, you know, the, like the rural broadband scheme would be an example that comes to mind, that often what happens is you know, the easier connections are cherry picked, or you start off where you can start sort of delivering decent numbers, and we just don't want to be on the back end of that here in Donegal, whereby, you know, we start to see, hopefully we do, be it if it's your government or indeed a Sinn Féin led government, who's to say that you know we actually start seeing targets in Donegal and delivery on that.
Yeah, and you know, accountability and implementation is really key. Each local authority would have both their social housing target delivery over a number of years, and it's about ensuring that these targets are being met, but also that we have the required level of land that's zoned for both residential, that we have a construction market, a construction sector that is well resourced, that we have the availability of, as you said, critical key infrastructure like wastewater, like Irish water connections, that we have access to broadband and electricity. And it's really important as part of what we're doing at the minute in relation to the National Planning Framework, which will tie into local authorities having to update their own development plans in relation to the future need. And I think that's really important, is that we have to raise the level of ambition across the country. And we are committed to doing that. And that includes Donegal. And I think all your councillors working together with government after the next election or before or in the here and now, to achieve this, it's really, really important that we all work together. And I think there needs to be a unified approach in regards to how we actually ensure that we have living infrastructure that supports residential developments and ensures that we actually have the schools, we have the roads, we have the transport infrastructure that support developments in our urban towns, mm-hmm. But also that we support those who want to build out in the country. And, you know, from someone who comes from a rural constituency, it's really important that we do have balanced regional development. And there is, you know, continued challenges around rural housing need, but we need to make that more manageable, more sustainable, and we need to support that
But you talked about the local councillors. I don't know what it's like in Mayo, but the local councillors here, you know, trying to draft a county development plan that would, you know, facilitate responsible building on one's own property or in more rural areas, but they can't get that to align with the national development plan. So, you're in a position of authority, a legislator effectively. You know, we need you guys to work on that at a national level, not join in understanding what the problems are, because ultimately it is the government that make these decisions. And as I say, you know, the local councillors here have worked together to try and make it more possible to build in rural areas, but what the county development plan doesn't marry with the national development plan.
Yeah, and listen, we are working extremely hard. We are reforming and making radical changes in terms of the Planning and Development Bill, which will ensure that we have enhanced coordination between different levels of government, including local authorities and key stakeholders. And I think that's really, really important to ensure that we have effective implementation of housing policy. And this reform on our planning system is really significant. It's the largest reform in over two decades. And certainly it will provide and introduce long-term development plans for local authorities so that they don't have to go back in after 2 years to review and then to draft again and implement, that these plans will be in place for 10 years to provide a long-term perspective on housing and infrastructure needs. And I think that's really important, that we have sustainable development principles in planning decisions, and that we you know, I suppose support environmental but also social goals and those who actually need housing here and now.
Minister, I've been told you're okay for time, but I won't keep you much longer. You are a Mayo person. You would be familiar with the defective concrete block crises. You're also Minister of State at the Department of Housing. You would know, and many people have welcomed, but some don't believe it goes far enough, that there's going to be a 10% increase in the defective concrete block grant scheme. It is to be applied. We don't know all the details yet, but there is massive anxiety, massive concern that people that were told to get on this scheme, it's a good scheme, you know, the early adapters, that it may not cover them. Do you have any detail as to whether or not this increased cap will be retrospective for those who took the government's advice, got onto this scheme, as I say, were early adapters, but now feel they could miss out to the tune of, you know, 40 odd thousand in some cases? Have you any information in relation to that?
Well, I know the current review is ongoing. We hope to publish that as soon as possible. I think the enhanced scheme, which now includes other counties outside of Mayo and Donegal, Clare has, and also Sligo, I think it's really important that we bring certainty to the review process. I think a lot of homeowners want that. I don't have the finer detail today for you, Greg. But again, I will talk to Minister O'Brien in relation to it. But I certainly feel that, they, you know, from talking to affected homeowners of pyrite defective concrete blocks in Mayo, and they have reflected that the scheme itself, managed through the local authority and with the support of defective concrete block coordinators on the ground, that they have felt the process has been made a lot more user-friendly. And I think the enhanced scheme, which now provides an increased grant of up to €420,000, meets a lot of their needs. And again, we want to ensure that, like the SEAI grant for those who were ineligible for it previously and now are eligible for it, are introduced. And you know, at this point, Minister,
we'd be very across all the good elements of it. And I don't mean that with any disrespect for you, but just at this point, you don't have the details to hand as to whether or not the cap increase would be retrospective. Do you have an opinion as to whether it should be retrospective to those who took the government's advice and began the process of rebuilding their homes? And I won't push you any further on that if you don't have the info.
But
that's just the question for you.
Yeah. I think it's important that homeowners who are going to construction now with the new cost considerations, and we all know the concrete and steel etc. have increased over the last number of months and years compared to the initial cost considerations. But I would feel that those decisions will be made in the round, and I suppose I can't give a definitive decision until I actually see the report being published. And I think that's important that we do reflect in regards to those who actually are ready to make that commencement.
Just one other thing, it's a media question really. I watched on with interest some of your questions and commentary as it relates to the scandals at RTE. As it turned out in the end, RTE managed to secure, was it £700 million? And part of that, there was a much lower figure for independent radio, 6, 7, 8 million, not really quite sure what it is, but it's pittance compared to the blank check RTE has. RTE, of course, then can, you know, with that cushion, compete really quite aggressively in the advertising market. Some independent radio, and I'm speaking as a consumer here, not on behalf of radio, would feel that's very unfair. Do you believe there should be better supports for independent media in this country, particularly radio, given the public service that they actually do? And as someone like myself might watch on and see RTE and all the chat that happened at all of these committee meetings getting this financial boost that, as I say, can also allow them to compete quite aggressively in the advertising market. Do you think that's fair? Is that an equal share of that cake, Minister?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I've been a huge advocate of independent radio and print media within our regions. I think it's really important that we have, you know, a balance across both our public broadcaster, but also that we support local news journalism. And I think it's crucially important for our democracy that they are supported. I know through various schemes, I have advocated that additional schemes would be introduced. Previously, it was.
Have you looked at some of those schemes? Have you looked at some of those schemes, Minister? It'd be worth, think, if you I haven't, we, it'd be worth you having a look at some of them.
Well, I think even through our party manifesto, I think it's really important that parties are having these discussions, because without trusted media, our democracy will certainly be challenged. And I know the tremendous work that Highland Radio does, not just for current affairs and news, but also, you know, sport, courts, you know, heritage, culture. You're the, you know, the people that people actually listen into in terms of what's happening within their area.
Yeah, and you've got the old Midwest down your way, but they're not going to survive without support. And I think if you look at the breakdown and the blank check sort of element from one massive portion of that to the pittance on the other side, and some of the hoops that have to be dumped throughout, I would hope you'd have a look at it, Minister, because I think the future of the industry is reliant on that. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to chuck that one at you. Final question, when's the election?
Well, certainly we're closing in on it, Greg. And I think how close it is, I think only the Taoiseach Simon Harris knows that. But I think in Tullamore, it has been possibly the number one question that the Taoiseach has had to answer. And again, he is committed.
And I think really the question, is full term, right?
Full term.
I think the question is would November qualify as full term in your view? And I know I don't want you to undermine, and you wouldn't either, your party leader, but do you think November, you could make an argument for that being full term?
Well, I think everyone and anyone will interpret it differently, like full term. And to the Taoiseach, as he said on Morning Ireland earlier, is March 2025.
He didn't quite say that. That's why he didn't quite say that, Alan. That's why I'm pushing you on it.
He did say it in terms of the end of this government, but to him or to many others, some would feel that would possibly be a different interpretation. But we'll have to wait and see. There still is a job of work that needs to happen in terms of governing the key issues across our country. And I know within government, we're all committed in terms of turning up each and every day and fulfilling our mandate.
All right. Okay. And Alan, I know you have an interest in media. I encourage you again, and I'm sure I don't need to, for you to have a look at that system, because the very future of how media operates here, I think, is at stake, and I'm sure you will. Alan, thanks very much for your time. That's Alan Dillon, Deputy Alan Dillon, Minister indeed of State at the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. All right, it's another segment of Your Voice, Your Community. Our focus today is going to be on the LYFS Intercultural Football Initiative. Two guests in studio with us, Gary Glennon, who is the manager of the Local Youth and Family Service. Good morning to you, Gary.
Morning, Greg.
Good to have you in studio with us. And Victor is with us as well. Victor Shibuzer, is that correct?
Yeah, it's good.
Shibuzer.
Shibuzer.
Shibuzer. Yeah, okay, Shibuzer. It's important for me to get it right. I'll know for the next time. Gary, talk to me about this initiative. It's early doors, really, isn't it? I suppose we're well into the year, but this only started in the second month of the year.
Yeah, I suppose, Greg, that was the thing. You know, we've always kind of been encouraging people to be active, you know, and football was one of the things that men had kind of said they wanted to be part of, you know. And I suppose, Greg, if you think going back maybe 13, 14 years, we always worked with the Donegal Travellers Project on a kind of intercultural basis, you know, and obviously in the last couple of years, I'm sure all the listeners are aware. We've seen new communities arrive and new arrivals. So kind of in February time, we kind of got together and says, okay, let's see, you know, who wants to come and play a bit of football, you know. But it becomes more than that, you know, in terms of football. So we've a range of nationalities, you know, who come along, you know, and people with intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities, you know. And it's
all inclusive, really, isn't
it? It's just all inclusive, yeah.
And this is not a criticism of you. It's so inclusive that as you start mentioning different groups and individuals, you start leaving people out. So you have people from all different types of nationalities, local Irishmen, refugees, asylum seekers, and all the other people with different backgrounds you talked about. Victor, did you get involved in this project from the beginning?
Yeah. As soon as I get in the country, I participated. I joined as the volunteer in the LYFS, and that, to be honest, it was really amazing. But firstly, I want to thank the Irish government, you know, for making it a safe place for us, coming from where we're coming from our countries. You know, I know it's not easy for us, but They made it safe for us. I want to appreciate, and I want equally want to appreciate the people of the Donegal and Letterkenny for accepting us. The place has been a very peaceful place, which, you know, looking at where we're coming from, you know, you see different nationalities, Nigerians, Ghana, you see the Algerians, you know, all over, even the Irish. In fact, I'm so amazed with what I'm seeing. You know, sometimes social media tells you something else, but you that is there witnessing, what you are actually seeing is quite different from the social media. So the love of seeing in this county, Donegal, Letterkenny, to be honest, is something too.
So you're saying, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, before we move on, it's an interesting point. You're saying maybe the sort of the anger, the division, the hate in some cases that we're seeing on social media, that's not your lived experience of living with and amongst the Irish people.
Absolutely, because to be honest, what the love I've seen is quite amazing. You know, in LYFS, you know, there's something I discover. There's this discipline. There is this coordination. There is this love. There's this connection. There's this bond, you know, that everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to come. Everybody wants to participate. You see people even taking off from their shifts to come, you know, play with us, usually Tuesday by 12 o'clock. Sometimes I look, I say, wow. But actually, it's really interesting.
Why did you move here to from, Victor?
Yeah, I'm from Nigeria. You know, I'm an asylum seeker. And a lot of things happened, you know, I don't want to talk about it because
that's not what we're here to talk about.
You know, a lot of things happens.
But did you play football in Nigeria?
Yeah, I do play. I play the semi-professional. I play a semi-professional in Gabros FC, located there in Anambra. Yes, I do. I played. So, and when I came here, I'm trying to, you know, find, because it's not quite long I came, you know, just barely months. So looking for one or two clubs to join. Yeah.
Yeah, Gary, very helpful for you to have people like Victor involved. Obviously, it's good if you have a semi-pro, right, for training and what have you. Not too bad at all.
Takes it up a level, yeah. Greg, yeah.
But also the enthusiasm as well. You know, you need people who are enthused.
Yeah, and I think that, no, not just Victor, you know, we have a couple of kind of leaders, strong leaders within the group there, you know, and I must say here now, you know, and Captain Banji and Hopsy, two guys, you know, who are encouraging, you know, who are kind of really shining lights within that group, you know, and they're always positive about everything, you know, and Victor, you know, we had a small discussion before we came in, you know, that kind of, you mentioned about zero tolerance, you know, everybody's just there to enjoy themselves, you know, but the football's only one element, Greg.
That's what I was going to say, right? Yeah. So you get people in the space. Firstly, you know, it's good to get men together and talk regardless of their backgrounds, but, you know, whilst they're there and, you know, whilst you have their numbers and that, too, I presume there's other areas that you can sort of start working with people in. I mean, give us some examples.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what lives do. You know, we engage people, we connect with people, and then we see, well, what kind of help and support do you need? So particularly the guys, you know, coming through the refugee system, the asylum seekers there, you know, things like school places, you know, things like health, you know, getting medical cards, you know, those bits and pieces, you know, and if we can access accommodation, which I know is difficult, you know, listening to the show earlier on today as well, that is a challenge. But, you know, just in terms of mental health and well-being, you know, so, I mean, we've been able to, you know, engage a lot of the guys who come, you know, their kids in the summer programme and the football camp, you know, their partners, you know, their wives, you know, in art therapy, you know, so it just brings that connection and then there's a trust.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's really important.
Victor, how important do you think is to, in terms of integration? So, and when I talk about integration, I mean all integration. So not necessarily just, you know, say a refugee or asylum seeker mixing with Irish people, but even, because people sort of talk about continents as if it's one place, right? But you talk about Africa, many countries with people with many different backgrounds or belief systems. So how important is it for everyone to sort of integrate and learn more about each other?
No, to be honest, you know, this LYFS, you know, this organization, you know, this group, you know, it has really assisted a lot of people, like the mental. Everybody, you know, probably, you know, when you come in, you're doing one or two things where you were, but currently now, some people are not doing. So it helps to boost their mental stability, you know, using sports as a tool, like the football. Every man wants to play football. Every man, you know, when you see other men, some people, they stay at home, they are fat, but when they come, they exercise themselves. Yeah, as actually, because I've interviewed one or two people, you know,
that introduced too, to. Gary.
Yes. I'm sitting here, I am fat, so I don't know what that means.
That they're very big, you know, some of them tell me. So when they come, they'll say, wow, after this exercise, exercise, to be honest, I'm relieved, I'm fine, and can see the person can have a better sleep and just, you know, forget about some kind of a thing as life moves on. Yeah, so to be honest, I tell you, this the sponsors of LYFC, they're really doing a great job. You know, some of them, they may be seeing it as ordinary things, but they don't know they're really affecting the life of people in Letterkenny, basically.
Yeah, too. And a lot of, and it's not talked about an awful lot, but a lot of people here that do come here for shelter of PTSD or, you know, are bringing other stuff with them. And we don't necessarily target that, but this is one way of doing so. How do people get in involved then? Because clearly Gary's been hugely successful, but maybe people might think there's a cost barrier. Or
that's interesting you say that, Greg. You know, that was something that came up very early for the guys. You know, obviously, you know, if anybody in the iPass accommodation, you know, they're getting like 38 euro a week, you know, and then, and I believe that sports should be free for all. But if you want to go and play five a side, and for many people know this, it's five a head. Yeah. So I must say, you know, and acknowledge, you know, what Victor says, you know, we need to acknowledge TUSLA, Children, Family, Sport Networks, New Communities Fund, that's funded this project, you know, and hopefully we'll continue to fund this project, because then we can hire. You know, the community centre, and they've been very good, and I have to say that to Liam and the team down there, to thank them for that. But they've been able to then hire the pitch and then get involved. Mm. You know, we're there every Tuesday at 12 o'clock. Anybody come along. We have a WhatsApp group for all the guys. There's over 55 guys in
and
the WhatsApp
And it is open
group.
To new members. That's the important element to this.
Absolutely. Everybody is welcome, wherever you are, as long as you're not doing anything, you want to join by 12 o'clock every Tuesday. Is a free, once you come, irrespective of who you are, where you're coming from, anything, just come. Once you come, just say, okay, I want to play, and we'll see with your kids, your filly, okay, you can do that. You are free to play, we'll just try you.
It's also interesting too, because a number of participants undertook training as referees, and there is a shortage of referees, which is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a link up with the FEI, you know, and Trevor Scanlon and Shane Bartow, local guys, and Paul Smith, Football for All guy. You know, they asked us, you know, would the guys be interested in refereeing? And we have seven guys who went through. Victor's been one of them.
Yeah,
he is one of the guys there. So,
and we've been assigned equally. We've been assigned to referee, because we've gone through the training, both the practical and the theory aspect of it. Though I do have the experience because I've played, you know.
Do you enjoy reffing?
Yeah. I can referee anywhere. I'm telling you, but you know, here is a gradual process where you go from one stage to another. So I'll start from it. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to say it's interesting, Greg, because we have now seven qualified referees.
We're starting off under tens.
But we have seven qualified referees, but you would never know that on a Tuesday when they start complaining about decisions.
Yeah,
you know,
that's football. And we all know you can't change a referee's mind, but you still go at them, don't you? I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, Gary, what's the contact details if anyone wants more information? And I think even maybe, because, listen, there's probably different from people from different backgrounds and that might not listen to Highland, you know, which is, I wish it were different, right? But it's the reality. Yeah. So, but people might be able to pass on the details and stuff as well.
Our link in with other organisations helps, you know, through the networks, you know, it's CFSN network through TUSLA. But, you know, and I must acknowledge, you know, John and Buru for the Donegal Local Development Company, you know, last year engaged ourselves as an organisation with the iPass centres. So we got to know people. But the people themselves, the guys themselves, are spreading the word.
Okay.
But, you know, our contact details, you know, we'll leave at the desk here.
Brilliant. And if anyone wants more information, they can call us. Super stuff. Yep.
Sorry, Greg, the guys quickly are going to Dublin on Saturday to represent Donegal and Sport for All Against Racism football tournament. So we wish them all the best on Saturday.
Yeah. Thank you.
Are you playing?
Yes, I'm playing. Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, we'll be playing in Dublin.
Whereabouts, though, on the pitch?
What position?
I'll be playing the striking.
Of course.
Yes, I'll be playing the striking.
Glory.
You can tell by the look.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He's lean and. All right, okay. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
And it's kind of nice that you're representing Donegal as well, too.
Yes,
isn't that? Okay, Gary Glennon, thank you so very much indeed. Victor Shiduzer, thank you so much indeed for that. Back with more after these.